Hello and welcome to the Leadership in Insurance podcast. This is the podcast where we discuss what leadership looks like in the modern insurance business. We talk to insurtech leaders and founders, innovators and change agents from the insurance industry. We also talk to thought leaders from outside the industry, such as organizational psychologists, performance coaches, and investment professionals. Anyone who can add value to the conversation on how to lead insurance businesses of the future.
Good morning and welcome to the Leadership and Insurance podcast. I'm your host, Alex Bond, and I'm very lucky to be joined by Herman from Besurance. Herman, good morning. Well, I'm saying good morning because this is the ruse because we release it in the morning. I'm very conscious it's the afternoon. So good afternoon to you and good morning to everyone else. How are you?
Thank you, Alex. Thank you for having me on your podcast. Nice weather in Vienna.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not having a good day today in the UK. It's very dark. I even had to put some lighting in, and it still feels a bit dark. So, it's the problem with the virtual background is that if I don't light myself, then I disappear. But then if I do light myself, I look like I've sort of got some sort of small halo going on. So I have to be very careful. But no, so good weather in Vienna. Very lucky.
Yeah.
If you'd be so kind, obviously Besurance and I know each other, but just for the people at home that may not know about Besurance, if you'd be so kind as to introduce the business and what you guys do.
Sure. Yeah. Besurance is an insurtech based in Vienna, but working in Europe. We are specialized in embedded insurance. That's what we believe in. That's what we do. We do nothing else. We do no B2C business, just embedded insurance. Our clients come from financial institutions, retailers, energy companies, banks, and so on and so forth. Literally every company who has a large enough base of clients and has a product which is more or less insurable, because our insurance products always relate to the main product. Mm-hmm. They're not sold on its own. Mm-hmm.
That's very succinct. I think people have overcomplicated it. And I think the simplicity of your kind of explanation leads into what I noticed about Besurance very early on, because you know, you've been very strict about this being a B2B2C offering. And I think some people are sort of doing that sort of a blended proposition where they're going to do some B2C, they're going to do some B2B2C. And, you know, what's the thought process in that? Is that simply be good at the one thing and be the best at that one thing?
I'm not here to criticize our other fintechs in our small family still in Europe. Yes. And obviously, everybody's trying out things. I mean, it's not so clear which way will work, especially in the insurance industry. Don't forget that it might be different in Great Britain, but on the continent, especially in Austria, insurances are pretty much 20 years behind the banks in terms of digitalization. Mm-hmm. Could give you some examples afterwards. Our idea is that we try to get digitalization done with as little capital as possible, so we don't have those amounts of money which, for example, Lemonade spends on Google ads or on Facebook. So that's the first reason we are not really into B2C, which asks for a lot of expenditure in advertisements. Mm-hmm. I would like to remind everybody, especially if somebody from insurance companies is listening to us, that insurance, no matter how nice you describe it, it is still a boring product. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, wow, today I'm gonna buy an insurance.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't happen. And facing that or realizing that, we thought that it might be quite clever to make it invisible, not to work on it on the basis like Lemonade or Koya are doing that and they do a perfect job in what they do. They describe it very clear. They have a perfect customer journey. Everything is done properly, but that doesn't change the basics of insurance, which is more or less boring.
Yeah.
I mean, for my person, I could talk with you for hours about my new bike.
Yeah.
My new gravel bike, great theme.
Yeah.
But the insurance which I bought with it, I mean, it's just a necessity. It's like, I know, brushing your teeth.
Yeah.
So we are specialized in a way of selling insurance embedded as to make it invisible.
Mm.
So if you buy your bike and the insurance comes with it, it's much easier than you buy your bike and after that you have, I don't know, six different kinds of insurances,
mm-hmm.
have to read hundreds of pages of TNCs, compare the insurances with very tiny differences. That's not what people like to do in their scarce spare time.
Mm.
And so we think that the offering of an embedded solution in those cases where it's possible is a better solution for the client,
mm-hmm.
and also quite good for those institutions who do that, for retailers, for energy companies, or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's, I was thinking, I'm going to dispute you on the boring, but I would do because I'm a man that has a podcast out every week on insurance. So I can't accept it's boring. But no, joking aside, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, we said just before this recording started that, you know, I'm so intolerant of buying my insurance. I hate the process of it, whether it's for my business or whether it's for my personal insurance. I'm probably the worst person in the world for not reading the terms and conditions, for me, it's about the reduction of pain. It's reducing the pain points. And I know it's kind of a nuance on the same point, but I think it's exactly what you've done very well and what embedded insurance does very well is that no one wants to buy it. No one wants to shop for it. We just know we need it and we want to have it in as painless a process as possible. You know, it's like, why would everyone really prefer to travel by private jet? I don't think it's the traveling by private jet. It's the fact that you don't have to queue at the airport. You know, that's what you want. You want to be whisked from A to B as quickly as possible. And that's what you're paying for. And that's why people enjoy it so much. And I think it's a similar thing that the journey of buying insurance, if you can embed for me to buy my bike and buy my insurance at the same time or anything like that journey, then I'm going to buy into that.
We might get to that later, but don't forget that also how people realized how easy shopping could be, especially now during the lockdown.
Yeah.
I mean, internet shops, they skyrocketed.
Mm-hmm.
They all have very good or excellent shopping experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't delivered by insurers.
No.
Still not.
No.
And now you're in a situation where, I don't know, 20 years ago, you were used to have some hassle in buying some things. But now it's so easy. It's just a few clicks and the stuff is at your front door, which doesn't, till now, it isn't that in insurance. And that's something which should be delivered because it is asked and it's people, yeah, they're used to it. They're used to that kind of quality.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I think there's definitely a conversation that I've had a few times on several issues about insurance is that insurance, definitely probably 10 years ago, we discussed insurance in a way that this is the model, this is the way it is, If you tried to challenge it, it was like, it doesn't work like that. And it was trying to operate in a vacuum. And my point I've made on several different, you could apply it to any industry, is that your experience as a consumer impacts how you view everything in the world. So my experience with Amazon impacts how I view the delivery of my takeaway service or buy my insurance. It has to. And then when you set the bar so efficiently as Amazon, I mean, I was smiling as you were saying that, because I'm definitely one of those people that if I can't have something delivered tomorrow, I will find another supplier that can deliver it tomorrow. You know, my decision making is, my tolerance for time is reduced so dramatically that I make those decisions. But before we get further into it, we had this question that I thought I was going to ask you at the start. And I think we've probably started to touch on quite a lot of it now, which was that, you know, embedded insurance has been, if parametrics was the buzzword of 2020, and it's probably still a bit in 2021, embedded definitely appears to be the thing that I've talked about almost more than anything else this year. You know, what is that? What is driving that? Is it sort of the tech stack's caught up? Is it cultural? Or I presume it's a lot of other things. But why do you think now particularly is such a kind of weight behind embedded insurance?
Well, I mean, first factor, as I mentioned, I'm pretty sure was the lockdown and the skyrocketing internet retailers business. Mm. Home office will stay, that's pretty sure, one way or the other. And so will the level of internet purchases. Mm-hmm. And this will increase demand and supply of embedded insurance. So that's one reason. And the second is the reason you just mentioned, that customers are more and more used to this availability, comfort, security of internet purchases. So, I mean, it might be better in other countries. In Austria, you sign an insurance contract and you wait 14 days to get the policy delivered. And that's just, you're laughing, but it's just data. I mean, it's not a... They print it out, they send it by post, and it takes them 14 days.
Yeah.
I mean, that's unheard of.
Yeah.
So buying insurance is still complicated, time-consuming, analog. And this is the reason why embedded insurance will continue to flourish.
Mm.
Because that's all we avoid.
Mm-hmm.
Our offerings are not complicated, they are not time consuming, and they are of course digital and not analog. And you definitely don't wait 14 days for the delivery of your policy, which comes real time.
Yeah.
Per mail, as you expect that today.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's that stuff's so crazy to think about, that you still have that experience with anything.
No, I have to I think that the main point is, who is the client?
Mm.
And insurance companies are very client oriented. The question is, who is the client?
Mm-hmm.
And the client for insurance company is the broker, not the end client.
Mm-hmm.
They have wonderful systems to service the broker. The broker doesn't wait for 14 days for all his information.
Mm.
He gets it real time. Mm. So they are able to do so, but the end client is not their purpose, it's not their focus. And we, of course, focus the end client.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Do you think there's something in that then as well? Because if you look at, let's just take digital retail as one example, but any online businesses, you know, digital retail is built with a much greater customer centricity and consumer. So they're already aligned with the thinking. And in a way, it's exactly the reason why embedded is is not just a good solution from an insurance point of view, from an insurance company point of view, to make money. It adds value to the offering from, you know, from some a retailer. So if you're let's take that bike example. If you're selling a bike, and then you could also sell me the coverage that's good and efficient and it's there, then it just adds to that buying experience. So they're already sort of committed, whereas the sort of incumbent insurance class still have this kind of duality of relationship where they are might be broker-centric. So there's something about the values of these kind of online retailers that are kind of in line with embedded more than a kind of traditional insurance company.
Yeah, and for, I mean, very easy. For an insurance company, there's no difference. Their relationship to the end clients is now not very close.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't be very close if they sell embedded insurance, because
sure. In
that case, the retailer is between them. Before it was the broker, so.
How do we, I had this question that I've always kind of thought about embedded insurance, in that, and I don't know where this might be, you know, the limitations of what you guys concern yourself with your product, but how do you think we tackle trust in embedded insurance? I haven't tested the limits on this yet, but I'm thinking who would and I wouldn't buy from in terms of an insurance. You know, do people have to have a certain level of brand? Do you think there's certain businesses that are never going to make it work? I suppose how do we? I just wonder what your thought processes were on that, because, you know, we trust insurance companies because they're a bit boring, because they've been around for 200 years. Do I trust Nike to sell me, I don't know, personal accident insurance? Or do I trust my camping supplier to sell me travel insurance or something? I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. First of all, there is always an insurance company behind, still.
Of course, yeah, of course.
So we might tackle that or discuss that issue later, but even Apple, a large, very large company, one of the largest companies in the world, they use an insurance company to cover for Apple Care.
Yeah.
So there is still an insurance company behind. Second, I might go to car dealers, which is a very fine example. May I trust my car dealer selling me an insurance? So first answer is there won't be any car dealers soon.
Yeah.
That's true. The first thing to know. Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Just to make that very clear, Mercedes, I don't know about Europe, but I know about Austria. They canceled every car dealership contract in Austria.
Wow.
Full stop. In Austria, you're only able to buy a Mercedes car via internet directly by Mercedes.
Wow.
So the next step will be, of course, and they are working on that, to buy with that car the insurance.
Mm.
And my point would be that if you trust that Mercedes is a decent car, because you buy one and it's not cheap, you might also have no problem with their insurance,
mm-hmm.
which, by the way, will be done by, I don't know, Allianz or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
One large international working insurance company. But to answer that on a broader perspective, of course, insurance has something to do with trust. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. And you are already at a dealer because you trust him with the goods you buy there. So at a first glance, there shouldn't be any problem in also trusting him not to offer you insurance, because he's not an insurer, but to sell you insurance.
Yeah.
And second, of course, the trust has to be earned. So the merchant or the financial institution, whoever, has to show that the sold insurance will fulfill its promises. That's, I mean, if that doesn't work, the trust will be gone within seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see a real problem with it. And going back to Mercedes, I'm pretty sure you trust, if you are a Mercedes enthusiast, I'm pretty sure you're good covered with a Mercedes insurance coverage.
Mm-hmm. I think trust is an interesting thing to discuss in insurance anyway, particularly on the personal lines side of things, because most people probably go through their life paying for insurance and not claiming, or claiming on very few occasions.
Yeah.
And then you've got this classic conundrum, and this is very old data, but I remember working in retail, and part of our training was that we were told that a customer who had a good experience told on average 3 people, and a customer who had a bad experience told on average 8 people. And that was before the internet and social media.
Explodes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that a lot about comparison sites, because, you know, I don't do this, but I know people that write reviews, but they only ever write reviews when they've had a terrible experience and they're angry about it. So they write one. So I'm always quite interested in trust, because I wonder how much the sort of general public trusts insurance anyway. So I wonder whether I think about that proposition, but you're right. If I trust someone to buy a Mercedes, then I'm probably going to trust Mercedes to provide the insurance. So it's just a case of, it's about the business is looking to sell embedded insurance, just need to be the right businesses. So I wanted to ask you, from a Bsurance point of view, do partners reach out to you? Do you reach out to partners, or is it a combination of the two?
It's definitely a combination. We have cases where the partners come to us. It's in some cases we go to the partners and tell them about solutions we already developed. Mm-hmm. And in some cases also insurers come to us, mm-hmm. because they have already partners but are not able to deliver solutions like we have.
Yeah.
Don't forget, if most of insurance companies in Austria, I know in, well, I think in Great Britain it could be different, are not able to produce a real-time policy. Mm. That's simply not possible in their old IT systems. We run our own insurance system where we are able to do so.
Mm. Mm.
And don't forget, some of these embedded insurance solutions are very, very small policies. I mean, we sold a dental coverage with a toothbrush, which is only, I think the premium is 50 cents per month.
Right.
So if you start in that case, filling out paper and sending it by post, the premium of the first 1.5 years is gone. So yeah. It's simply not manageable.
Yeah. And those micro opportunities as well are really fascinating for me, because, you know, you just wouldn't have been able to offer that on a profitable basis. So it's, I see it's such a value add to the insurance ecosystem, particularly when, you know, there is a threat to not insurance companies, but the ecosystem as a whole. There's little bites being taken out of it. You think about parametric solutions, and some of those are providing,
this dental insurance was a parametric insurance.
Was it?
And all the parametric insurances, they work on a digital basis, otherwise it's not possible to offer them.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating, because a lot of the stuff I've talked about with parametrics, whether it be we've had a few people on the podcast, and a lot of it is the alternative capital, hedge funds, etc., are quite interested in it because it works more neatly in that sort of environment. You've got this kind of death by a thousand cuts thing about insurance companies as they are, if they don't enhance their offering and do new lines. And, you know, things like the example there, the level of premium is so small that if it wasn't for an embedded operation, you wouldn't be able to offer it. It'd be meaningless.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you can add these things up. I wanted to ask you about regulation, because that's how does that impact embedded insurance? borderless trade. I know it's another unsexy topic.
As I told you before, I worked in a large insurance company. I was in those days responsible for sales, and I had to introduce IDD in our company. So I'm quite aware of these issues. So to say it quite frankly, it's less a problem than a burden. I mean, regulations, even as there is an EU IDD regulation, still very national orientated. And do not reflect the necessities of borderless internet solutions. So, and this is also the reason why most insurance companies or branches of insurance companies are very national orientated. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have cases where our customers sell their goods in, I don't know, in three different countries, and it's very hard to find one insurer who offers insurance in three countries. So that's something which we have to discuss on a European Union level, mm-hmm. because it's still very national. There is the fact that the IDD is an EU regulation, but still every national law sets little bit different rules, which makes it very hard for us. But on the other hand, that's our advantage to those who are not in this field.
Yeah. And is it also kind of the protective shield of the traditional insurance capacity providers against, let's say, less traditional forms of capital?
As I come from one of those large incumbents, no, they hate the IDD as we do. So
yeah.
It's not the thing they wished for or they asked for.
No, because how much of a threat do you think embedded represents to the traditional? Because look, I know most embedded offerings are, you know, a traditional insurer is behind it. It's being offered because the customer is owned by a retailer, and they're selling an insurance proposition. But realistically, as long as there's enough capacity behind it, it could be offered by, you know, an alternative or a new entrant or...
And no matter what, a lot of the value chain will be cut off.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's definitely a threat. But for me, it seems that most of the incumbents do not see it.
Yeah.
They don't see it coming. It seems a little bit like this famous Kodak example, where they didn't see the possibilities of digital photography.
Mm-hmm.
They will lose some parts of their value chain. But don't forget, as I explained before, even Apple, largest company in the world, is using an insurance company to organize, settle, and do everything for their Apple Care.
Yeah.
In that case, it's AIG. And that has to do with a couple of factors. One is that, of course, Apple could use their capital much better in doing more business with Apple things than investing it in a very capital intensive insurance company. And so I'm pretty sure they decided it's better to let that run by somebody else. Profits are not that high. So it won't be any threat for an insurer that Amazon or Apple will start an insurance on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, there will be some cutoffs of the value chain. That will happen.
Yeah. But that's the thing, isn't it? I think it's more about, we've discussed a few times on the podcast about this has got boring now, the insurance is broken statement by every new insurtech that says, oh, it's broken. And it's like, no, but there's gaps in the value chain. there's because the world and I spoke to George Beasley and he made this point really well, is that insurance is very good at insuring what it was built for, which was tangible assets. And now we move into kind of an intangible world. We are struggling to deliver on that. And then I would also say that just the landscape in which that we're building it, as we've talked throughout this conversation about what the customer expectations are, insurance is just simply not built for that world. However, that world does offer huge opportunities. But yeah, I have just a slight concern that there's, you know, we are still talking in 2021 about being sent paperwork, taking 14 days to happen. That's a real world that happens today. And it's frightening to see.
Well, as far as the, obviously, they don't have those challenging companies like they have in the bank sector. Mm. I mean, my easiest example is just imagine you have a bank account where you don't have the possibility to look up your banking sheet via internet. I mean, that's unbelievable. And insurers are like that still.
Yeah.
Due to the fact that there is no large insurance digitalized yet, they still think they have time.
They don't.
Yeah, I see. But still, that there will be. I don't see it that pessimistic, because still the core of insurance is a very specialized, very capital intensive industry, which they run very good.
Mm.
And I don't see anybody who could do that in that way.
Mm. Well, we've seen that. I mean, talking about the high profile successes, I use that from a kind of investment point of view. The biggest insurtechs that we're seeing globally aren't returning profits on their insurance model. You know, they may be from a kind of investor standpoint delivering, you know, excellent IPOs and great share prices, but at the moment the delivery of profit from a kind of underwriting perspective is just not there. So it's difficult to argue that insurance is broken. It's just, it knows what it's doing very well, but its customer delivery or customer centricity isn't there. My thing with insurance companies is, you know, most of this podcast is talking about innovation and change. And I think I came to I don't know how sort of easy this is to do, but I almost felt like splitting it off and saying, right, we have a capital base that we use as an insurance company, and we're going to effectively build a digital insurer from the ground up. Those are the models that seem to work.
Absolutely agree. Again, the Kodak example. I mean, the story is that the guy who ran analog photography, he always said, I earn 99% of our profits.
Yeah.
So I decide who gets the money, which is understandable. And the same happens today in insurance companies. I mean, they make 99% of their profits with brokers and staff which they have in their sales department.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, if you start there an internet solution, that can't work. So you mm-hmm. have to have a own company which does that on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they don't have to have their own insurance license. They could take the coverage from the mother company, mm-hmm. but you can't run that within an incumbent. I think that doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, just
examples like Allianz Direct shows that it didn't work.
Yeah. I mean, just that conversation there, like it's about sales, and you know, insurance is sold, not bought, and we live in a world where
that's something we try to turn around.
Yeah, exactly.
Embedded insurance, this is not sold, it's bought.
Yeah, exactly.
And therefore our sales costs are nearly to zero.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's bought.
Yeah. That's
a big difference.
Yeah, it's such a fundamental shift, and the industry's. Look, some people are going to get it right, and some people are really not going to get it wrong. But it's fascinating for me because, you know, on all sides of the insurance spectrum, whether you talk about reinsurance, whether you're talking about large P&C commercial, whether you're talking about personal lines, we just see this kind of lag behind. You know, investment banking changed dramatically in what, the 80s, when it went fully electronically traded, and the profile. From someone who works in the recruitment industry, what I find interestingly is how quickly the profile of what a banking professional looked like. And you were replacing salespeople with data scientists and kind of people who could code. And in insurance, we're just not seeing that change in what the profile of that person looks like, yet the world and around it is changing much, much quicker. And it seems to me personal lines is changing much, much quicker because customers are demanding it. But particularly where we seem to be lagging is in the commercial space and in the reinsurance space. And again, coming back to that broker-driven model, that's the most broker-centric part of it. And it's interesting how, funnily enough, that's the slowest part that appears to be changing. But you've got to be incentivized to change. And the Kodak moment, you know, they were very profitable until they weren't very quickly. But it's very difficult to justify as a publicly traded company saying we're going to reinvest in changing our whole business model to deliver. But I won't get on my high horse about certainly not as a consultant to the sector, because that seems like I'm hanging myself out to dry there. But Herman, really conscious of your time, so I just wanted to sort of draw this in. Yeah, what's next for Besurance? You know, European wide, are we going to go outside of that? Is there anything we should look out for from you guys? Or what's coming up on 21-22?
Yeah, we see now, unfortunately, the pandemic wasn't very good for our business. So everybody had other issues, like some were in panic mode. Mm-hmm. Like tourism. Mm-hmm. Some couldn't handle the massive increased turnover, like bike industry, and some couldn't produce because the lack of products. Mm-hmm. So the last year wasn't that easy, but we see now, as hopefully the pandemic is ending, that the interest starts again. We have very promising projects running now with large financial institutions, especially financial institutions, card companies, retailers, furniture companies, for example, which in the past wasn't the field for insurances, mm-hmm. but they made tremendous business these days. And we're looking forward to broaden up the possibilities of embedded insurance. We're not that far in that project, but still we talked with large house owners who have their complete renting system digitalized. Mm-hmm. And for them, it would be very easy to put in an insurance with it. And they are interested, so we will develop that, because till now, household insurance wasn't embedded, but I'm pretty sure it will be in the future.
Mm. Mm. I think it's very difficult to see a personal line insurance that isn't embedded in the future. And you know, it's just, you don't need insurance about something until you've got an insurable asset. So at the point of which you buy that asset that's when you should be buying it. So, it makes perfect sense. I bought a house in lockdown, and it's strange to me still that I'm not being sold insurance along that process, you know. Yeah, life insurance to cover mortgage, you know. Yeah. It's household contents. There's so many opportunities that it just seems a miss as well. And from a customer point of view, it's just, it's a pain. It's another thing I've got to go out and do. And particularly when a lot of these insurances are driven by price. They're very price sensitive, particularly in the UK, very price sensitive market, that if you deliver me an insurance within a price bracket, a tolerance, I'm going to buy it. So it's just about how easy you can make it.
Because you're happy to get rid of the problem.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, but then I'm an easy person to sell to, so maybe I'm the wrong example. but look, Herman, thank you so much for your time. That's it's been great to speak with you. It's very kind of you to give up your time to talk to me today. So thank you so much, and thanks for being a great guest.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting us. Thank you.
Thank you.
As always, this podcast is brought to you by FinPro Search Partners, often simply known as FinPro. FinPro is an executive recruitment business working in the insurance and insurtech space on an international basis. If you would like to find out more about FinPro, please visit our website, www.wearefinpro.com, or our FinPro company page on LinkedIn. I've been your host, Alex Bond, and I would personally love to connect with anyone who is interested in the changing world of insurance. So feel free to reach out to me directly, either on LinkedIn or via my email at alex@wearefinpro.com. I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and I hope to see you back next week. Thank you.